This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, exhausted and heartsick over the pandemic, a faltering economy, and particularly from the bitter divide that has ended with a sitting president for the first time in American history refusing to concede his loss in a closely monitored election, we look to the Peace Church known as the Society of Friends, but better known as the Quakers, for some ideas about what we can celebrate as we approach Thanksgiving Day and about the path to reconciliation in a divided land. So now let's go inside the Compass.
I'm happy to be able to do a blessing ceremony in a real traditional fashion, which I would call Quaker protocols.
On the afternoon of Friday, November 6th, a small clutch of socially distanced Quakers gathered in front of the Friends Meeting House on the corner of Sheridan Avenue and Discovery Road to witness artist Craig Jacob Brown's installation of the dove he had carved atop the newly erected peace pole that stands at the center of the new Native Garden, and to partake in the dedication ceremony. The bitterness of the still unsettled election was fresh on everyone's mind, and in a nation so divided, the ideal of peace the sculpture is meant to embody seemed terribly elusive. Hungering for hope and positive thoughts, I decided this week to ask two of my favorite Quaker wise women, former meeting co-clerk Sandy Harold and renowned local singer, activist, and sometimes kinetic cop Carla Main, about how and what they were celebrating on Thanksgiving in the time of COVID, and how Americans might find a path to reconcile their differences. Sandy, why don't we start with you?
I think this is a wonderful kind of an idea of a program, Steve. Because I think we don't spend enough time thinking about what's good in our lives. We do-gooders are forever looking at the problems and looking at disaster. You know, normally we would gather together all of Mike's children and as many grandchildren as possible. We have usually had 14 to 17 people. This year, of course, that's not going to happen. So I think we are going to be in this house. We will invite Mike's brother from San Juan Island to come visit, and because he's way more careful than we are, because he lives with his girlfriend and her 100-year-old mother.
Wow.
So he'll come probably for one overnight. And I hope some phone calls will take place, but that's probably what we'll have. We will just watch some videos, hang out, hopefully take a walk. So as part of that, when you ask, what are we going to celebrate? I think, and therefore, what am I grateful for? What I'm really grateful for is I've just completed 76 years in pretty darn good health. Not perfect, hasn't always been great fun, but, you know, I celebrate literally every morning. I get up and walk on my own 2 feet across the room. I celebrate the fact that Mike will be 83 this week, and he's totally out there striding through the Cappies trails and on the beaches and working for the land trust. And, you know, our life, our health and life is, we all know if you don't have that, what else do you have? And so I'm really grateful for that. I'm grateful that we still live on a beautiful planet, that we can go out and we can birds sing and flowers grow, and there's so much beauty. And without going into global warming and what that implies, I have to celebrate day by day what there is in beauty there. I celebrate my community, my Quaker community, the community of Port Townsend, the community within that of the Quakers, and then of a group of women who have always gone into the swimming pool together, who still legally or illegally get together every Friday for coffee, standing around a parking lot. Bring your own coffee, wear your mask, bring your own chair. But there's about 20 women who get together, support each other, take care of each other. When something goes wrong, give rides, to make meals, do the whole thing. I feel like I'm an incredibly fortunate person, and my life has been so much more rich and full than I was expected to have when I was 16, graduating from high school. So I have a lot to celebrate.
Okay, well, I may come back with another question, a surprise question for you after. But let's hear from Carla now.
I our regular practice at our house is to have my mom, our family here, and neighbors and friends. Our gathering is not as big as Sandy's. We usually only have 6 or 7 people. But it's wonderful to invite folks who, for both Christmas and Thanksgiving, who might not have another place to go to celebrate the season. And it's become a real tradition for us. So this year, due to COVID, I think it will be myself and my husband and my by then 91-year-old mother. We're very much looking forward to having duck together. We like to have different stuff every year. This year, we're going to make duck. I am going to reach out to the folks who are not able to join us and see if we can have a telephone conversation or FaceTime or some way of including them. And I also hope to be able to have a way of including my sister's family and my brother's family, because I know they are increasingly feeling badly about not being able to see my mom regularly. And so trying to balance her safety with not having people come from, you know, Snohomish County and Skagit County, and also knowing how much it means to them to be with her, that's something we're trying to navigate right now. So I'm really looking forward to the holiday. I love Thanksgiving and Christmas. And as to what I am thankful for, I wake up every morning saying thank you. That's my pledge to myself, is that when I first open my eyes, I say thank you, no matter whether it's the day after an election or no matter what. I say thank you. And I'm grateful for abundance during this time of COVID. I am grateful for my community, the broader community in which I live, that I am just so grateful for and so feel so connected to, even though we're all stuck in our little houses. I am really grateful for my spiritual community, which encompasses my Quaker friends here and in other parts of the world, and also people with whom I share a lot of spiritual values, even if they're not a part of my quote-unquote religious community. And as I get older, I find more and more that spiritual part of my life is a really essential function that is a pillar for me. So that's really important. I am really grateful for old age. I am grateful for slowing down. I am grateful for health problems. I am grateful for diminishment. I am grateful that I am forced sometimes to sit still and pay attention, because that maybe is the only way I would do it. I'm grateful for our musical community here and music in general, for my family, who I love dearly, and yes, for the beautiful, beautiful surroundings, our globe, our community, our world, the nature that surrounds us that is so sustaining and uplifting.
I think that piece about being grateful for diminishment might surprise some people. And it kind of leads me into the surprise question I had, which is, you know, in this difficult world that we're living in, what strategies do you pursue to stay positive and aspirational?
Well, I'm a person who is has been very active and very focused on doing, and I am working to become more aware of the importance of being and the importance of being slow, of paying attention, of being contemplative, and understanding the importance of heart connection, not just of me shouting at somebody about how they need to change. And it's basically my health problems and my aging process that has kind of beat this lesson into me, that there is so much richness in being present, in keeping my eyes open and my mouth shut.
And Sandy?
Oh, I couldn't have said that better myself at all. I really couldn't. I do a morning silence practice every morning to sort of get me centered for the day. And out of that, I think, comes the reality, along with a lot of training through this spiritual programs, to shut up and listen, as Carla said, and be there. But also, I work really hard to keep the larger view, so that I know that our lifespans here on this planet are very, very short, really, in terms of the universe. And that even what we go through here now is just a little piece. And so I try to keep that larger view that it's not forever, that whatever happens down the road, you know, it's like global warming. I know that we're in a very destructive phase. I know that Mother Nature is going to ultimately take care of herself. My biology husband assures me of that. So I think just by saying I must do what I can do, and beyond that, it's none of my business, I think it's really important that we try and keep working on keeping an inner calm as we go into a world of confusion and chaos and anger. And, you know, it's just the way it's going to be. And, you know, I have probably 10 years left on this earth, if I'm lucky. And I sure don't want to spend those 10 years fighting. I just don't want to spend them fighting with the world.
Or fighting with your neighbors. I mean, one of the things that I've been thinking about myself a lot is, you know, as Quakers, we all kind of hold this core belief that there's this goodness that's at the heart of every person. And when a person makes you angry, your judgment about that can become clouded, and you can stop like seeing the goodness in other people. I know I've been guilty of that with certain people. I kind of wonder about what each of us can do day to day to try and diffuse that and, you know, humanize ourselves to those who may perceive us as being their opponents.
I agree completely. And I think we have a situation, you know, as long as I can remember, people have been talking about how polarized our country is. I think it's as polarized now as it's ever been, except maybe the Civil War. And I think there is so much opportunity for reaching out and listening and looking for the humanity and the soul within the person that we encounter. And I have gotten so used to these divisions and these political differences and my frustration with what I feel should be happening in our country and in our world, that I stop listening and I stop expecting good behavior out of the person with whom I disagree. I start expecting bad behavior. And that's a pretty good way to entice bad behavior. And I really, the older I get, the more I focus on shutting up to the extent that I am possible, muzzling myself, and really looking for the humanity and the soul of the individual with whom I am discussing, and also broadening my circle. So I'm not just talking to people who reinforce my opinions all the time. I think that's really important.
I think it's really important, but I only know a few people in Port Townsend with whom I don't agree on most of the basics. So
luckily for me, I have several family members who provide me that opportunity.
Oh, that's so lucky.
Yeah. No, I didn't feel it was lucky, but you now.
I have those too, but one lives way out in northern Idaho again, and one lives in Costa Rica. And then others are nicer about their disagreements with me. So when I say that I usually have Thanksgiving with Mike's family, Mike's kids, I don't seek out my siblings. And my sister is here and she will come over, I think, for Thanksgiving. But my brothers, the only one I really like is in France. So, but yes, I have those two.
I guess I'm very unfortunate because there's a lot of unilateral thinking in my family. So, I don't have those opportunities. Although, we have in our neighborhood an opportunity like that.
You do. You've got signs up all over. Yes.
Well, there's one place where the Trump sign has been up since 2016, since early in the last election cycle. And I've considered often how to go and engage there. But if you're looking to sort of diffuse tensions in the world and there's a thorn in the side of a whole neighborhood who... I mean, the only reason that sign is there is to try and trigger the neighbors.
I don't know your neighbor. I do know the sign. I'm thinking of a discussion that I had, not in this last Way of the Spirit session, but an earlier one, where there's a woman who lives in Eastern Washington who was trying to figure out how to speak her truth in her neighborhood, which was very conservative and very much Trump supporters. And she knew that she lives alone, and if she put signs up, she was going to get pushback from her neighbors. And so we talked about it, and I encouraged her to think about doing something that talked not so much about candidates, but as to her values. So, and she came up with the idea, which I just thought was fabulous, of doing some kind of a poem based on the old Burma Shave signs, so that she sort of have a little bit of humor to it too, but have it be about her values and the things that she treasures about our country and herself and her community, and not the kind of in your face. But I think about her feeling so alone and surrounded by people with whom she disagrees. And I think about your neighbor. And your neighbor, I'm sure, feels that no one understands him and that he is, trying to battle back the forces of whatever, communism or who knows what he believes. But that's part of the thing, I think, is that we just keep, beating against each other and expecting the worst out of one another. And I have a couple of friends on Facebook with whom I continue to engage in spite of the fact that they will whack me about things that I post that have any political nature. I don't preach to them. I ask questions about why they believe what they believe, and I questions about why they disagree with me. What is it about what I've said here that is difficult for you, that is problematic for you? And of course, Facebook is not the place to have those kind of discussions, but I don't want to defriend them and I don't want to demean them. I want to hear them and figure this out. And maybe I never will, but I want to find some common language. Because if we can't do that, it's all over. I mean, that's the thing that's so worrisome about this election. If we cannot find a way to reach out, you know, we're on the downward spiral.
This morning, I was thinking about the Andy Griffith Show, which I'm sure both of you watched as I did in our childhoods. And I was thinking about it in the context of this rural-urban divide that is going on. I mean, I've been staring at the election maps, and it's just astounding how uniform and universal it is. It doesn't matter whether you're a blue state or a red state, because every single state, and even our own county, is divided between the population centers and the less populated areas. And it's a phenomenon that really I'm puzzling over. And I'm also thinking about the fact that you know, like in our hearts, we all have this ideal of an America that is unified, where neighbors love their neighbors, small town America, with well-integrated, caring communities. I mean, that's sort of what the Andy Griffith Show showed me. And I'm just wondering, you know, like, where did that America go, and where did these divisions arise from? What is the reason for this, the ferocity of this split? And I don't know if either of you have any reflections on that.
I don't remember any Andy Griffith show that featured a person of color. I remember conflict in those shows, but it was usually about the town drunk or who was going to get to date who, or, you know, the concerns of the kids in, you know, being bullied. Or I think it's true that that community was iconic in terms of their ability to get along. And I also think they were not challenged by a lot of the challenges that are found in an urban community. They did not have, as far as I remember, you know, people of a completely different culture or religion, you know, to deal with. I mean, I wonder how comfortable a Native American would have been in that town if they showed up, or an African American, or a person who was an immigrant from another country. That was not right. Anything that I ever saw dealt with on that show.
But you're certainly right in the sort of uniformity of the culture in the town.
But, you know, I grew up in a town that's sort of iconic in northern Idaho. And the issues there were more economic class. And there was a disparity there, but people who had money understood how dependent they were on people who didn't have money. And so it wasn't so great, but it was pretty well integrated, even though Carla, you're right that it didn't have any of those cultural diversities. But my concern for this nation is not, I mean, that is clear and right out there in our faces about the cultural clashes and the racial clashes. But those Ohioans who are strong Trumpies, there is also a huge divide. That's what I want to say. There's also a huge divide between white middle-class Port Townsends and Seattleites and white middle-class Ohioans. And that's the cultural divide that, in a way, I need to find a way to cross and make communication and understanding even before we can even start talking about racial issues and stuff, because that's the one I utterly do not understand, why we are socialists and they are freedom Americans, freedom seeking Americans. And so there's that one that just bugs me, because I cannot figure out why we've become so separate.
I think that's another cultural issue, and it's not a racial issue, but it is definitely a cultural issue
between
the south of our country the people in the South who have never gotten over, sorry, the Civil War, and right. not in terms of, I'm certain that some of it has to do with racism, but I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that they lost and they were looked down upon and are still looked down upon. If you think about how people in the North think about people in the South,
right.
it's very pejorative. It's very, you know, and it's the same way with the Midwest. I mean, I've lived in the Midwest. I was born in the Midwest. And there, too, is this feeling of, oh, you elitists on the coasts who yeah. are highly educated, who think you're so smart and you know better than the rest of us, and we work our tails off and we're not respected. There's definitely a lot of that there.
And therefore, we who live on the coast and have all that education and all those ideas need to get over ourselves.
Exactly.
And go talk to them.
You've been listening to an interview about Thanksgiving and peacemaking with Quakers Sandy Harold and Carla Main. To close out today's show, we bring you the dedication speech for the new Peace Pole by Port Townsend Friends Meeting clerk Monica Fletcher.
Today, Port Townsend Friends Meeting is celebrating our effort to place this Peace Pole as an encouragement for all to seek daily inner peace and work toward world peace. It serves as a refuge for our members to stay a while, to contemplate the power of peace and tolerance, and feel the strengths of diversity. Its placement on this busy street corner calls out to our community, too, for all to contemplate the larger need for peace worldwide. Each side of the pole has the word peace in different languages and scripts. On the north, Esperanto, Chinese, French, and Tahitian. On the east, Swahili, English, and German. South, Japanese, Arabic, Hebrew, and Russian. On the west, Navajo, Nez Perce, Tlingit, and Portuguese. Atop the pole, newly placed today, is a dove carved by Craig Jacob Brown. We are honored to have his work here and grateful for the spirit in which his work was done. It is Port Townsend Friends Meeting's intent to join our prayers for peace with those around the world. There are over 250,000 peace poles across the world, and it is a great moment today to link our small, peace-loving community with the sensible and necessary effort to insist peacefully that peace is the way.
And how many seas must a white dove sail before?
This week's Compass is written and produced by Steve Evans. The Compass airs Saturdays at noon and repeats on Mondays at noon and 5 p.m. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream KPTZ live 24 hours a day. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.